he's not giving actually knowledge, but he's giving what they are good. Because they are the citizens of his country, of the country. So how can we, how is it an example of
King Rajive? He's an example because he's very rigidly following Grihastha Dharma and Kshatriya Dharma, which is to give charity. In ideal civilization, household life is based on giving charity. The whole conception of a household unit as a selfish world unto itself has nothing to do with real human civilization. In real human civilization, householders are always seeking to avoid the narrow confines of what? The narrow confines of just husband and wife and their children. That's it. In real human civilization, household life is always defeating the narrow bodily conception by expansive acts of charity. So, therefore, for example, Srila Prabhupada would always say how his father would never take his evening meal without inviting some wandering sadhus to share the meal, 5 to 7 every night. His father was very liberal, and so Srila Prabhupada noticed that not all the sadhus were really sadhus. But in any case, his father was doing his Grihastha Dharma. And in the case of Rantidev, not only is he a Grihastha, but he's a king. He's a Kshatriya, and Kshatriyas are meant to thrive on giving charity. So, we can take the spirit of that, according to your ashram. As you know, in Vedic culture, before the householder takes his meal, the husband goes to the door and calls out 3 times. Is anyone hungry? Is anyone hungry? Is anyone hungry? Before taking his meal. Now, obviously we can't, it won't fit in today's culture if our householders do that. They go to the door of the house and, anyone hungry, please come. People think it's quite strange. But somehow that same spirit has to be there. And that spirit of charity keeps the household from becoming the dark well. So, if the householders are always giving and sharing, then they're happier. But as soon as everything turns inward, like an ingrown toenail, then life becomes very miserable. The husband and wife become frustrated with each other very quickly. The bodily conception of life looks very attractive, and the narrow household conception of life looks very attractive. It'll just be you and me, and we'll build our own world together. It looks like that, but it looks attractive, but it turns out to be a desert. Whereas in real human civilization, the husband and wife are always expanding their compassion, and that goes for a different kind of relationship. In a real human civilization, the husband is taking the lead in executing dharma, religious activities, and the wife is assisting. But, of course, we don't have a real human civilization these days. That's the problem. Still, householders can keep their home well ventilated by always giving in terms of time and money for a for spreading the Krishna consciousness. In the modern day, it is said that time is money. So, householders can not only donate money, they can also donate their time, their expertise. That keeps them lively. So that way you can apply the spirit of Maharaj Ranti Dev.
In the literature it says that Krishna gives and takes remembrance and forgetfulness. Someone leads a very simple life and he forgets everything in this life. How will he learn in the next life to better himself, or does the soul have remembrance or not?
If someone, you do something wrong in this life, how will you ever know better? Because you forget. The Vedic knowledge is there to give everyone information. Why? You have a material body. There's no mystery about your having a material body. Now you may not remember exactly the particular inappropriate activities you performed in your last life. But when you look in the mirror, what do you see? You see a material body. So that lets you know that the main thing you did wrong was forgetting Krishna. That's the actual important point. Not that, in my last life I stole from someone and I don't remember that now. Look in the mirror and you see another material body. That lets you know that you performed activities that separated you from Krishna. Of course, separation from Krishna is impossible, but you performed activities in which you became forgetful of Krishna. That's the main point. Not that you have to remember whatever particular crime you did in order to get some realization. No, all you can do is look in the mirror and you see you have a material body. That lets you know. I forgot Krishna. That's the main problem. You solve the main problem of forgetting Krishna and everything else is taken care of. So when you look in the mirror and you see a material body, then you should know. You're guilty. So it's not important that you remember, in my past life I whacked at someone who was sick, or I threw stones at people, or I was an army soldier who committed war crimes. That's not important. You can look now and see the evidence. Reaction, the energy to your body. And you can also see how things are happening to that body. Reactions. So, therefore you can understand that in your past life, you forgot Krishna, you had material desires, and so now you have a material body again. So therefore the best thing is to try and remember Krishna, not to try and remember the specific crimes you did in your past life, you should try to remember Krishna so that you won't get another material body.
So, I was thinking many years ago about the offenses. I can understand them, that I can offend my fellow man, my fellow devotee, but how can I make offenses to Krishna? Who am I that I can offend Krishna? How is it possible? What was his philosophy about
because Krishna is everything. How can I, when I am a big entity, how can I offend Krishna?
You can commit nama parad, offend the holy name, seva parad, offending the deities.
Yes, I know those names, of course. But it's names for me. How can I offend a deity? It's everything. How is it possible for a human being to offend God?
Just like any person, you can offend a person, and the Lord is a person, so you can offend.
Yeah, I understand in that context, of course. He's special, but I thought another platform also. I think that it's impossible to offend God. How can I offend God?
In the deepest sense, no.
Yeah, exactly.
Krishna is equal to everyone, and he's beyond. He's beyond favoritism. He's beyond being pleased or displeased in the ordinary sense. Mm. But still, there's a system in place that if you act in a certain way that's negative, you'll get a certain reaction. Krishna's most concerned, firstly, when you offend his devotees. But it's not that he's sitting on a throne with a thunderbolt in his hand, who's going to offend the master. Krishna has better things to do than that. But if you make offenses to Krishna, that's your problem. You disqualify yourself. No. Just like the sun is shining, but if you do something that always keeps yourself in darkness, that's not the sun's problem, it's your problem. I think that's what you mean.
Yes, so I understand that. So it does mean that in the end, when we are talking about offenses to God, to Krishna, so we are talking actually about offenses to himself also.
You can look at it.
Consequence is my own disqualification in the eyes of the world.
You can look at it that way.
Okay.
Still, it is quite permissible to say offending Krishna, offending the holy name, offending the deity. Yeah.
Can I come back to one question again?
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, Maharaj, you know this glimpse from Bhaktivedanta Maharaj about compassion. Do you know this poem, perhaps?
Which one in particular?
About compassion. When he's telling him to somebody, in this poem, he's telling to somebody, if you are compassionate to this man who's sitting in the prison, or to this woman who is sick, and he's counting to many different cases. Then, if you are so compassionate that you give your life to this person, then you can go to the spiritual world. Then you are qualified to go to the spiritual world. You don't know this.
So, who is not in prison in the material world?
No, but you don't.
Who is not sick?
Yeah, no, there are so many cases. Particular, really, is from the material world.
Yeah, I'm speaking. In the material world, everyone is in prison and everyone is sick. Everyone is sick.
So we have to be so much compassion?
Yes, to get them out of prison and cure their disease.
By preaching.
Of course. Everyone is in prison, everyone is sick. So the Vaishnava is compassionate to cure their madness and to get them out of the prison of material existence.
Oh, but in this terms, he said, if you have so much compassion that you take this position of this person and give your position to the person and you take this position, if you have so much compassion, then you qualify.
As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, one who sees the true equality of all beings in both their happiness and distress actually sees things. So you see that regardless of their differing external amounts of happiness and distress, as spirit, soul, they're all equal. You can see that also by way of your own experience. You know what it's like to have happiness and distress. But through knowledge, you understand that material happiness and distress is external. But even though it's external, people identify with it. So how to show them compassion to stop them from identifying with their happiness and distress? That's the greatest help you can give. So a creature feels empathy. He or she identifies with the suffering of those in illusion. You know how it feels to be driven crazy by material desires. You know how it feels to be tortured by lust, anger, and greed. You can feel that. You can feel how these persons are driving themselves crazy. And so you want to do something about it. You want to give them Krishna consciousness. You can actually feel it. And you know it's such a suffering, miserable condition. You can see with teenagers, for example, walking around and they have no idea how to handle their bodies, their hormones. They're just driven crazy. You can see the adults walking around and they have nothing to their life except watching television. You know how that feels. You can put yourself in their place and therefore you want to give them Krishna consciousness.
In the Bhagavatam, this is full of Chittakinda Maharaj, and he got instructed from the Hara Muni, so then you got a number and then Dashan, they have the Upanayana. In the end, he was cursed from Parvati. Prabhupada writes, this is. That he becomes the lesser one. When Prabhupada writes, this is all arrangement from Krishna, that he comes as soon as possible to him. Why had he taken another verse, as Vita Sora, because he got all from Narada Muni?
These are Bhagavatam personalities. Krishna wanted to demonstrate something to Chittakinda. He behaved so gloriously when Parvati cursed him. And Shiva pointed out to Parvati, look at the character of Vaishnava. You are very beautiful, my wife, but I think by his character he has surpassed your beauty. Just see, he was not disturbed at all if he cursed him. What did he say? Narayana Pulasare Nikutasana Dimiti Sarva Pavarana Yadakesh Ravitriyaka Darshana. Heaven or hell doesn't matter as long as I have service to the Lord. So Chittakinda is a special person, special character. It's his service to demonstrate such a standard of pure devotion. We can't imitate flying around in a heavenly aircraft with beautiful heavenly planets in it. It's just because you could do that without being affected. And he didn't mean anything ill when he was laughing at Lord Shiva, or Lord Shiva's having his wife sitting on his lap, surrounded by sages. But the wife took it very seriously, Parvati took it very seriously. how dare him criticize us. But she really did it seriously. And then later you find out that Shiva explained that Chittaketana was just enjoying some joking words between us. He's laughing at me for having my wife sit on my lap in the company of sages. Oh, look at him flying around the hilly aircraft with all these beautiful women. But the wife, Parvati, she took it all seriously. How dare this Chittaketana become so proud to criticize us? I curse him. And Chittaketana just came before him and said, so be it. He's showing the detachment of a Vaishnava. And when Chittaketana took birth as Vritrasura, Vritrasura was such an extraordinary devotee that even Indra was astounded. Vritrasura was to be killed by Indra. He knew it. And so, when they were fighting, Vritrasura told Indra, come on, come on. Fight harder, fight harder. You're supposed to kill me, I know it. You'll kill me, and I'll go back to Godhead, and you get to stay in the material world and enjoy heavenly planets. Who's the winner and who's the loser? So these are extraordinary personalities.
I'm just thinking of the subject of the mercy of the devotee that we need so much in our lives, and an example of the story of Vriha Bhagavatamrita. Recently I read a verse that is very inspiring, when Gopa Kumara Rasarupa, he was explaining to Madhura Brahmana his life story, how he reached the Lord. And Madhura Brahmana, he have heard whole story, but he didn't really, understood it really until Sarupa, when he noticed that Madhura Brahmana cannot have the same realization, he decided to give him a mercy, and then at once he got whole realization. Sarupa, so to say, invoke in him the spiritual emotions and full realization of Krishna. So what is that mercy? How do we reach the mercy of the devotee? And what's the nature of that mercy? When and how it comes? If you could just say something about that.
A devotee thinks that he or she is the devotee of the devotee. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Krishna saves Oma, Krishna Deepa. He says to the devotee, you have the power to give me Krishna. Therefore I'm running after the devotee shouting Krishna, Krishna. The other day he's running after Krishna. He says he's running after the devotee shouting Krishna, Krishna, because the devotee has the power to give Krishna. That is Krishna's personal system, the way he has things arranged. By pleasing the devotee, Krishna becomes pleased. That's the system. Everything is personal. You please the devotee through service.
How do we explain in Krishna consciousness movement the meaning of word realization? That someone has realized something.
They have experience of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Jnana Vijnana Kṛtāma Kūtastho Vijitendriya. The transcendentalist is satisfied by both wisdom and applied knowledge, in other words, both theoretical and experience. Theoretical knowledge and experience knowledge. Jnana, vijnana, kṛtāma. The soul is satisfied, the self is satisfied by both jnana and vijnana, kṛtastho vijitendriya. In this way, you can control your senses.
So many places I've seen or even been to seem to have just in some way lost the pulse of the people today.
What do you mean by that?
Oh, just lost.
What places?
Oh, whether they're temples or preaching centres, they seem to be struggling in one way or another. People are, you know, their minds are so much more disturbed and they're becoming more and more burnt out earlier and earlier. How do we change our tactics to reconnect with the young people?
Change our tactics?
We change our approach.
What do you mean?
Yeah. Well, to get through them more, to get more people coming along and get them.
Same old thing, compassion. Compassion is nothing new. Compassion means voluntarily accepting inconvenience to help others. So you can package things this way or that way, but without compassion, nothing works. Compassion means that you're going to go through the trouble to reach out to help others, even though they may not appreciate it. That compassion is learned by example. There's not so much this technique or that technique. Without compassion, no techniques work. So the main technique is compassion. The willingness to undergo personal inconvenience for the sake of helping others. That's what characterizes a real devotee. A Vaishnava lives for the others. He or she feels for the others how they are suffering without Krishna. Let me try to do something about it, even though it'll be inconvenient for me, even though it'll be troublesome for me, maybe they won't appreciate it. Still let me try. So that is the main technique. Everything else is quite subordinate to that. When you have compassion, then you'll think how to reach out to others. So the main thing is compassion. Without that, nothing works. Compassion is developed by association with those who have compassion. Devotees who are motivated by compassion are able to reach out and touch others' hearts. And gradually your compassion increases and becomes more and more pure. You have to start somewhere. It's like you're walking down the street and you see somebody walking on a roof close to the edge and about to fall off. How can you not say anything? You have to call out, hey, stop, stop. You're going to ruin yourself. And suppose a person yells back at you, ah, just mind your own business, I'm all right. What can you do? Without compassion, you call out. Similarly, a soft-hearted devotee cannot rest peacefully seeing how people are destroying themselves today. Now, if you're truly caring, yielded up the qualifications to help. In other words, we're not sentimental. We're not so much interested in so-called compassion, which doesn't involve developing the qualification to help. If you really care, you'll develop the qualification how to help others, not, oh, I feel for everyone, but then you don't take the time to develop any qualifications. Just like, in the material sense, someone sees that there are sick people in Somalia. So then he says, I'll go to medical school, I'll become qualified as a doctor, then I'll go to Somalia and I'll help the suffering people. So compassion means that you're willing to do the necessary to help. Not just have the sentiment, oh, the suffering people. You realize that I'm going to be effective in helping others, I've got to upgrade my skills. So compassion is not just some sentiment, oh, I feel so sorry. You see drowning people, you know, I feel so sorry for the people drowning, but you never took the trouble to learn how to swim or be a lifeguard. You really feel that people are drowning, you learn how to be a lifeguard, you become certified. That means first you have to save yourself. Save yourself, become qualified to save others. But if you just march around saying, we've got to save the conditioned souls, we've got to save the karmis, and you never do anything to become qualified, what does it mean? If you really care for others, you'll become qualified to help. You'll put in the time and energy to become qualified. Not to just walk around with a bleeding heart. Oh, I care for everyone. Oh, I'm so sorry. Everyone's suffering. But then you never take time or effort to become qualified to help anyone. Compassion is a very serious thing. It's not any whimsical or superficial. Yes.
Can you imagine the Bhagavad Gita when it says that no one, Krishna says, no one is more dear to me than he who preaches my glories, he says, to the devotees.
Mm.
So, how does, is it more dear to Krishna preaching to his devotees or preaching to non-devotees, and how do we understand that verse exactly?
You preach to the non-devotees, so they become devotees. You want them to become devotees. Krishna says, don't talk about me to those who aren't austere, or to those who are envious of me, or those who don't have devotion. Well, that means everyone today. We wouldn't be doing any preaching at all. So the Vaishnava knows what Krishna means. Krishna means, make them qualified to become devotees.
This material manifestation is only for the sake of the conditioned soul. It's not of, the Lord has nothing to do with this materiality. He has no reason to create it. Only for our sake.
Right.
On the other hand, if we see Chai and Nichai, they have prayed, my Lord, we can see your desire to fight. Please make an arrangement so that you can fight, because you can do it in the spiritual world. And after this, so you can curse, to become demons, that the Lord can appear and defeat them. Isn't it there's also the desire to create the material world? Isn't it? Can you understand what I mean?
It's
Krishna is never in the material world. Just like the rainbow is in the sky, but you cannot find where the end of the rainbow rests. It looks like it's in the material world, actually. It looks like it's resting on the ground, but actually the rainbow is not. You can't find where the rainbow is, the two ends of the rainbow are resting. Similarly, Krishna looks like he's in the material world, but actually he's not. He comes to this world on his own terms. Sambhavami Atmamaya. He has Atmamaya, his own internal energy for appearing in this world. The material world means forgetfulness of Krishna. For Krishna, everything is spiritual. But for conditioned souls, there is such a thing as material existence. It's the prison house. The government has no reason to create prisons except for persons who want to go there because they commit crimes. Similarly, Krishna has no reason to create the material world except there are persons who want to rebel. And out of mercy for these persons rebelling in the material world, Krishna shows his pastimes. It's like, oh, the material world is there. Why not appear there and have some fun? It's not a, you say, it's not the desire of someone who's lacking something. That's why the word lila or pastime is used. It doesn't have to be. Sometimes in your life, of course, it's a material example. When you didn't want something, someone said, "Would you like to do this?" You said, "No, why not?" You know, it wasn't a deep desire in your heart. It was, "No, why not?" Sure, yeah. Maybe some little kids are playing with some balloons, and they push a balloon through the air to you, and you're walking home, you just. Back the balloon back at them. It's not a big deal. It's not that you had a desire to do that. Is Krishna had no need to do things, still he acts. Mainly for the pleasure of his devotees. The devotees will like to see me fight. So let me fight. All right.